we'll get started in a minute or two. The closer you sit, I may from time to time have you twist your neck and look back and refer to the pipes of the design. So it's not absolutely crucial, but it does lure you more toward the front, which I know is not a very Lutheran place to sit. But I know. That's right. So you may have to give up your normally reserved pew for this presentation. Before we get started, I'll just tell you what you see on the TV screen comes from a website that is actually noted on page 5, the last page of your handout. At Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary, until a couple of years ago, all senior students who were about to graduate had to do a senior church history paper. Now they do a more traditional master's thesis, but until maybe 2010, everybody had to do a senior church history project. I shouldn't call it a paper, a project. Most of us wrote papers. Most of us wrote essays, but some chose to make videos, and there were some very digitally gifted students who put together a 90-minute documentary video of the Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary Pipe Organ Project, and it's that DVD that we are going to use some of the extra clips. They've got the regular 90-minute documentary, and they've got 4 special extra clips. So this is the stuff that didn't make the final cut. This is the extras that you buy a movie, you watch it at home, and then you see the extras when you're done with the movie. We're going to watch a couple of the extras. That's what you're going to see there. But if you happen to decide one week you want to check this DVD out of the church library, we do have a copy of it. There's information on the website if you want to grab your own copy. I'm sure I'm the only person in this room who says, "Ooh, I want a documentary on a pipe organ." But what's interesting about it is it's not just about a pipe organ. It's about a Lutheran church body's worker training system. It's about Lutheran perspectives on church music. It's about not just playing an instrument, but the mechanics. That thing that's upstairs with, you know the hymn, "Oh, That I Had a Thousand Voices"? Most choir directors think to themselves, "Oh, that I had a dozen voices." We've got over 1,000 voices up there, essentially. But just as you know how to drive a car, but you might not know how to repair the car, that there's 2 sides to a pipe organ. There's the driving it, there's the playing it, there's the making the sound, but there's also the design of it, which is a very blue-collar kind of a feel. You think of playing an organ as a very white-collar type of a profession, but there's a very blue-collar side to the design and building and construction of a pipe organ. So we're going to get into a little bit of that today as well. This is not technically a Bible class. This is a one-week filler between Easter and examination. Works out real well. But even though it's not technically a Bible class, this is a gathering of God's people in God's house. So why don't we open with prayer? If you're not familiar with Luther's morning prayer, take out the red hymnal, open to page 152, and near the bottom of the page, page 152, not hymn 152, but page 152, on the bottom you will find Luther's morning prayer. Since there's a couple different translations, and some of you may have memorized one and not another, good for us to literally be on the same page. So let's join together in Luther's morning prayer. I thank you, my heavenly Father, through Jesus Christ, your dear Son, that you have kept me this night from all harm and danger. Keep me this day also from sin and every evil, that all my doings and life may please you. Into your hands I commend my body and soul and all things. Let your holy angel be with me, that the wicked foe may have no power over me. Amen. Let's take a look at our handout for today. If you didn't grab a copy, there's stacks of it. You saw 2 stacks, but they're the same thing. This is the handout that we'll refer to today throughout the course of this presentation. Mozart, the great musician, said that the pipe organ was the king of instruments. What do you think he meant? Steve.
It was one instrument. Almost an orchestra off of it itself. So that's why he called it. It could do many functions.
Depending on the design of the organ, it could do a whole bunch of stuff. that you can't just do on a piano or a trumpet or a violin. Okay, it's options are one reason. Any other thoughts on that? There's a great ring, you know, Easter Sunday, you let all the stops out. If you don't like loud organ music, Easter Sunday is not your day, right? We literally turn everything on. And I think I was trying to count when I was playing one of the hymns, like the loud stanzas, final stanza of an Easter hymn last week. I think for every note I was pressing down, there were 15 pipes playing. There's four notes in a typical chord on a hymn, so that means there's 60 pipes playing for one chord of a hymn. That's a lot of strength. But we had a very fine cantor singing today who could sing also with this ginormous instrument, playing very softly. The organ's got a great range. It's got a lot of strength, but it can be very soft and gentle as well. Those are really the two probably biggest reasons why you might say the organ's the king of instruments. Both its versatility from soft to loud and its wide range of sound and things that it can do. Those are the things that I had in mind. Did you have anything else that maybe jumps to mind when you hear the thought that the organ is the king of instruments?
Seeing the size of past kings, it's ginormous.
It takes up a bit of space, right? And the funny thing is, this may surprise you, this organ is, relatively speaking, on the smaller side. There are I'll tell you that in the Arizona-California district of our church body, I think this is the best pipe organ. I've played at a lot of the churches in our district, and unless there's one out there that I haven't met, this is hands down the best pipe organ in our district. I've had the chance to play on a lot of organs outside the Arizona-California district in the Midwest, where the large established 150-year-old congregations have big stone buildings and have built organs and then expanded them two or three times. And when you compare us to those instruments, you'd say, oh, this is actually on the smaller side. That might surprise you, but remember, small does not mean soft. You could have a lot of soft pipes in a huge organ, and you say, this organ doesn't sound very big. Well, it just doesn't have a lot of strength. You can have a smaller instrument designed for a Lutheran church where people sing like they mean it, and you can have a lot of strength even though it's a smaller instrument. So that's another reason why we might say the pipe organ is the king of instruments. Just all its versatility, its size, the range of sounds, the volume of sounds, etc. To understand how an organ works, my goal in this presentation is that average Joe parishioner, not the musician, but average Joe parishioner can walk away and say, well, okay, I'm still not a musician, but I kind of get what's happening on Sunday morning. That's my goal for this. I'm going to assume some degree of musical knowledge, so forgive me if I'm talking above your head a little bit, but hopefully you'll get a basic sense of how this instrument works. This is not a recital. This is more of an informational demonstration to help you understand and appreciate what the organist is doing up there on Sunday morning. When Brian Gerlach was here for his recital in February, Paul Baker said afterwards, he said, I didn't realize you guys were doing all this when you play. You got this keyboard and you got this keyboard and your feet are playing down here, and then you got the gas pedal that turns up and down, and then you got these switches that you turn on and these buttons, and we didn't realize you were doing all of that. If you don't realize we're doing all that, that's good. Because we don't want you to realize that we're doing all of that. We want it to go smoothly. But a lot of stuff is happening. It's kind of fun to play because it keeps you on your toes. And I got to turn this on, I got to turn that off. And there's a lot more than just playing the notes that's going on. So I want you to understand how it works and what the organist is doing. If we can kind of get you an appreciation for those two things, how it all works, fits together, and what the organist is doing, that'll kind of be our goal for the day. Before we even talk about the pipe organ, there's a musical phenomenon that we kind of have to understand. And it's the idea of overtones. So part one is called Overtones 101. This is going to seem kind of academic at first, but it will make sense as we start talking about the pipe organ in just a little bit. Can you imagine, we've got some 8-foot pipes up there. Can you imagine if we had a musical string in front of us today that was 8 feet long, and it was pulled really tight, pulled properly tight. If you pluck that musical string that's 8 feet long, we can imagine such a thing, it's going to start to vibrate. And what we don't realize is that it vibrates in multiple patterns at the same time. If you look at this chart on page 1, which I just copied out of a a little booklet on pipe organs and how they work. This is written by a retired and since gone to glory professor in our circles, James Engel, who was at then Dr. Martin Luther College for many years. The string at rest, that 8-foot string that's not moving at all, that's pulled tightly, is at the bottom of the chart, letter A. And then you go up. When you pull that string, the whole thing vibrates as a unit back and forth, and that produces a sound. So it produces, an 8-foot string would produce that low note. But it's also vibrating in half. So as the whole thing vibrates, it's also vibrating in half. The vibration in half is producing this note. Your ear only hears the bottom note. Your ear hears the bottom note because it's the loudest, and it's just the way our ears work that we hear the bottom pitch. But it's also playing much more softly an octave above. The string also vibrates in thirds, all at the same time. Your eyes probably wouldn't even catch this. It's also vibrating in thirds. When it does that, it makes you're playing this string, but the thirds that are vibrating sound this note, an octave and a half higher. Those of you who are more scientifically minded are probably, oh yeah, I get that. Those of you who are like me and not scientifically minded just go, all right, that's what it says. I guess it's true. If you don't totally grasp it, it's okay, but it's just a concept we want to understand. The string is also vibrating. If it vibrates in half, it vibrates in thirds. It also vibrates in fourths. So when it vibrates in fourths, you're playing this note, but it plays two octaves higher. It also plays an octave and three notes higher, and an octave and a half higher, and an octave and seven notes higher, and three octaves higher. All of those sounds are happening at once, but your ear really only hears the bottom note. All of those sounds are happening at once, but your ear really only hears the bottom note. Those other sounds above it, which we call overtones, are very soft and very faint. A really well-trained ear can hear it. Most of us, we just hear the bottom note. I had some fun explaining this to Lydia, my 10-year-old. I said, on the piano, you could hold down middle C. You can do this at home if you got a piano, a regular piano. You hold down middle C without sounding it, so that it sounds. And you play the C that's an octave lower. But remember, this C an octave lower is going to have an overtone that's at middle C. And so you're going to hear middle C even though I haven't really plucked it hard. So I'm going to hit the lower note, but if you got really good ears, and if the microphone helps, you'll hear that's middle C. You're going to hear that note softly when I pluck the lower note. You hear it? It's kind of, yeah, even in the back you hear it. Okay. And the same thing is with all those other notes I told you about. Those overtones are sounding. Your ears really just hear the bottom note, but all of those overtones are sounding. That happens with the plucked string. And not only does it happen with a plucked musical string, it also happens with sound produced by going through a column of air, like 1,177 organ pipes. The same principle is taking place. So if you kind of get this, you're going to understand why the organ has all these different sounds at all these different pitch levels. Turn the page. Sounds and stops and other such stuff. If you have sung in my choir, you may have heard me say one of these things to our accompanist. I may have said, turn off the gedeckt and use the gems horn instead. Or, more appropriately, add the swell 2-foot principle and couple it down to the great. And the whole choir did this. What is he saying? This is organist insider lingo, but it's all built on this phenomenon of different sounds that it produces and also different overtones. It's all behind these numbers that are used on the organ. The size of the organ keyboard is represented by the chart on the top of page 2. The organ keyboard, and we have two. Some organs have three, or even really large ones would have four or five. Two does the job just fine. You only got two hands, so you can only do so much. It's helpful to have those other ones, but two is just fine. There's basically five octaves of notes. The piano keyboard goes an octave and a little more below, and it goes, I believe, another octave above. Another octave above. So the piano keyboard is wider, and yet the organ can hit all of those notes with the different sounds it has, even though they're not represented here. We're going to discuss that concept in just a little bit. The organ keyboard, 5 octaves, it typically has 5 octaves and 61 notes. Some organs have a little bit less in the top. We're going to see that video of the seminary organ. The seminary organ has a little bit less in the top. I think it has 56 notes. The typical pedal board. The pedal board is like half of an organ keyboard, the bottom half. You're playing a note with your feet, and you add a little extra bass to that note, so it rumbles a little bit more. It's a little bit lower. You feel a little more support. That pedal board is 2.5 octaves, 32 notes on most organs. Some organs have 30 notes, just 2 notes less. There's some terminology. Remember Monday, Thursday's sermon, I said, in any field, you have to know the terminology. In football, you got to know the terminology. In your job, you got to know the terminology. In the wells, you got to know the terminology. In organs, you got to know some terminology. So let me explain some terminology that will help you understand what's happening with these keyboards. First of all, there's a term called a rank. A rank. A rank is a set of pipes that produces a sound for each note in a keyboard or pedal board. So if I turn on any one sound on the organ that's in one of the keyboards, there are 61 pipes for that sound, because it's got to be a different pipe for every note of the keyboard. So you realize that if you add a set of pipes, you're adding, if you want to add a sound to the organ, you've got to add 61 pipes to the organ to produce that sound. Or in the pedal, you've got to add 32 pipes to add that sound. If you look, for example, if you're in a spot where you can turn around and look at the organ, the right side, you see kind of 4 groups of pipes that are all diagonal the same way, and then the far right, there's another set that's right there. It's in front of that enclosed box with the shutters in front, okay? Those pipes that are in front of the enclosed box on the right-hand side, that's all one sound in the pedal. Those are all one group of pipes, all to just produce one sound in the pedal, and it takes that much space up. Now, the smaller pipes take up a lot less space, and so there's a whole city of pipes behind on the left side that you can't see. There's a whole other city of pipes in the box on the right-hand side with the shutters in front of it. The shutters control the volume. But that just goes to show you just half an organ keyboard or a pedal board, 32 pipes, they're pretty big. It takes up a lot of space upstairs. Very good. Our AV crew is on it. Nice work. All right. One step ahead of me. So a rank is one note, one pipe for every note. One pipe for every note. Then there's also these things that we call stops. The stop is on our organ, it's a switch. If you look at the top of the organ, there's just these buttons or the switches that you can push down to turn a sound on, or you pull it up to turn a sound off. That's called a stop. The reason it's called a stop is when you pull it up, it stops the flow of air into the pipes. Really deep terminology. Organists are simple people. We need simple vocabulary. So a stop can either turn the air on or can stop the flow of air to the pipes. On the seminary organ, which we will see in the video, that organ is a mechanical action organ. Here, it's an electric impulse that when I press the note down, an electric impulse says, blow some air through this pipe. On the seminary organ, the whole organ, except for the thing that blows the air through, except for the blower, which has electricity, everything is mechanical. It is an engineering work of art. And when you pull you have a drawbar for every stop. You pull the drawbar out, and it moves a lever underneath a certain set of pipes with little circles that allow air to go through. And then you press your note down, and the note opens up a little air chamber that sends the air through that particular pipe. Everything is mechanical. It is a tremendous work of art and of engineering. So there's a very engineering side to organs. There's the artistic, I play it side. But then there's a mechanical side of it, and it's really an impressive thing. You'll get a little sense of that when we watch the video a little bit later. Now, every one of these sounds on the organ, which we call stops, has two things on it. There's a name, there's a word, often in German, because good Lutheran organs were started where? In Germany, right? So in Lutheran churches, the name of the sound is almost always in German. So you got to know a little bit of German to be a halfway decent organist in a Lutheran church. The other thing on the stop is a number. The number tells you how long the longest pipe is in the organ. The number also tells you the pitch it's going to sound at. So an 8-foot pipe, as I said, this is the lowest note on an organ. The piano's got a little more than an octave underneath it. This, on the organ, it would take an 8-foot pipe to produce this sound. So those really tall guys in the front, those 8-footers, this is the pitch you're going to get from them. When I go up to middle C then, that's actually going to be a 2-foot pipe, but when I see the number 8, that tells me the lowest note here is 8. That also tells me whatever I play, I'm going to play the note I'm getting. When I play middle C, I get middle C. When I play E, I get that E. Not an octave higher, not an octave lower. But there are lots of sounds in that organ where I hit a note and I don't get the note I'm playing. I get a note that's lower or higher by an octave or more. Based on that illustration at the start of our presentation today, if the string is vibrating in half, 4 feet, what happens to the sound? It goes up an octave. Imagine if the string is 16 feet long. What happens to the sound? It goes down an octave. So if you see an organ stop that says 8, that basically tells you the note you play is the note you're going to get. If you see an organ stop that says 16, that tells you the note you play is going to be an octave lower. An octave lower. If you are at a church that's got a monster organ that has a 32-foot stop on it, visit Martin Luther College Chapel. Some of Hilbert's been there before. Pastor Schmidt, his dad is a professor there. A lot of us have gone through MLC. You see the new MLC organ. There's 32-foot stops on that thing. And actually, the 32-foot stop doesn't sound like a note as much as it sounds like a growl. It just sounds like that. But it's really cool. I mean, you think the building's shaking, but it's not shaking. It's just the sound vibration. It's a really neat effect. So 8 tells you not only that's the lowest pipe is 8 feet long, but 8 means the note you play is the note you get. 16 is the note you play is an octave lower. 32 says the note you play is 2 octaves lower. 4 is the note you play is an octave higher. 2 is going to be 2 octaves higher. 1 is going to be 3 octaves higher. So it's if you can handle division and multiplication, you can handle the concept of the numbers on the stops. The other thing to realize is that some stops have fractions. You're going, oh, how does this make any sense at all? But remember we said that the string vibrates in half and in thirds and in fourths and in fifths? Those fractions just represent that. So the string that's vibrating in thirds, that's an octave and a half higher, that's represented by the number 2 2/3. The bottom pipe is 2 2/3 feet long, and whatever you play, if you play a note, it's going to be an octave and a half higher. So if I have that sound on and I play a middle C, but it says 2 2/3, I'm playing this, but I'm actually getting this. I play 1 3/5, I play this, but I really get 1 1/3. I play this, but I really get... And those are all overtones. You don't play those fractions and those higher notes by themselves usually. You almost always have an 8-foot, because 8 is normal. 8 is regular. 8 is you play what you play is what you get. But remember, we want to play off the overtones. We want to bring out some of those overtones so that a melody can stand out a little more, or we have a more interesting sound that we're hearing. Whatever hymn that we happen to be playing, or whatever piece of music we're playing during the offering. So these are all like ingredients to a recipe. And every piece of music or every hymn, you got to say, what's the right ingredients to bring out what the composer did in this piece of music? Our organ does have a 2 2/3. It does have a 1 3/5. It does have a 1 1/3. Two of them are on the lower manual. One of them is on the upper manual. And so I hope you get the idea of the number refers to the lowest or the tallest pipe, but the number also tells you the note I play, is it going to be the note I hear, or is it going to be lower, or is it going to be higher, and where is it going to be? And you mix all these together like a recipe to create the sound that you want. You usually don't just turn on a 1 3/5 by itself. It would sound bizarre, sound weird. It would be like having a recipe where all you're eating is salt. You know, salt is not a meal. It's an ingredient. It's a spice, right? So you don't just eat the spice. You eat the spices with the meal. The meal is the 8-foot stop. The spices are everything above it. That's a way to look at it in a practical sense. Okay? There's also, so there's these different pitch levels you got to know about. There's also four different kinds of sounds that an organ produces. Four categories of sounds. And you just got to know these as well, and we'll see them demonstrated in just a little bit. There's the main sound produced by an organ is called a principal. It has nothing to do with the guy that runs the school. Principal is just the main thing. So the main sound on an organ, it doesn't imitate any other instrument, just sort of the basic organ sound is a principal. And there'll be 8-foot principals and 16 and 4 and 2 and you name it. There's also one set of principals called a mixture. Instead of a regular number, you might see a Roman numeral on a stop on the organ. That's a case where you hit this button down and you have several pipes playing at once. And the Roman numeral tells you how many pipes are playing at once. On our organ, we have a mixture 5. And those are very high up there pipes. And there's 5 of them playing for every note you press down. These are also part of the principal family. They'll be talked about a little bit in the video. All right, so principals are the main organ sound. Then there are flutes. And guess what they kind of sort of sound like? Exactly, yeah. There's different kinds of flutes. Some have one sound quality, some have another, but there's this general family of flutes. Then there are strings. Guess what the strings kind of sort of sound like? Like a violin or a cello. We only have one string on this organ. And the organ has got a stop in there that's for another string, and we say that it's prepared for. So when they built this organ, they said, we want to add to it, but we don't have the money for it right now. So we're going to put this in, and sometime down the road, we want to add this extra sound to the organ. That's the seminary organ did that, and they have since added what they intended to add. Our organ is the same way. We haven't added it yet, but that's a possibility. They said, if you don't do any other expansion of this instrument, at least put this in at some point down the road. So there'll actually be 2 string stops. Finally, then there are the reeds. Reeds are not what you think of like a reed instrument. They are in the sense that a reed at the bottom, at the foot of the pipe. Here is a pipe that used to be in our organ until it was damaged. It's been replaced. It's not like it's missing up there. But this is how most pipes are designed, where there's the air goes through here, and this is actually almost all covered except for a little lip here. And it really forces the air through the rest of this pipe, and it produces that's how the sound is produced, going through this column of air. The reeds, there is a little reed on the bottom here in the foot of the pipe that buzzes. It produces a more distinct sound. It's a sound that kind of stands out from the whole rest of the organ. Our organ has just one reed on it in the pedals and one reed on it in the keyboards. The seminary organ has 2 reeds, but the reeds can sound like a trumpet or a trombone, can sound like an oboe, can sound like a clarinet. Reeds are sounds on an organ that really stand out. And the pipes are a little bit different than all of the other pipes in how they're designed. But they're very useful because they help to bring out melodies. Or on Easter Sunday, the trumpet reed makes you feel like it's Easter Sunday. You got to throw that on top of everything else. So you got to understand the numbers, and you got to understand the 4 categories of organ pipes. Now, with all of that introduction behind us, we're about halfway through our time. Turn to page 3. We're going to watch a video clip in just a second here. The video clip is from this documentary I mentioned about the Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary organ. This is the copy of the documentary from our church library. There's a website for this that's listed on page 5 if you want to check out. These videos that I'm going to show for you right now are on the website. But the video, you got to get the DVD, you got to borrow it from the church or pick up a copy for yourself. It's now sold on Amazon for $10. The builder of our seminary's organ, Martin Ott, who originally comes from Germany, and he has a very thick German accent when he speaks. So it might be a little hard to understand unless German is kind of a second language to you. He's going to, in this documentary, there's a little video clip called Stops. And he's going to say, he's going to walk through, and you're going to hear as one note is played, you're going to hear the different sounds that the organ produces. The same note is being played, but you'll notice the sound quality is different, and also the pitch may go up or down. So this will just give you a little sense of what I've just described. I've explained it to you academically. Now this way, maybe you'll get it experientially. While this is going on, I'm not going to dematerialize, but I am going to go up in the balcony. And when this video is done, then I'm going to refer you to page 4, which has the list of the sounds on the St. Mark's organ. And I'll demonstrate a couple things from the balcony real briefly after we watch this video. But as, you can refer to page 3 as you watch the video. The names of the sounds are in the far left column. Notice lots of German there. But I translated it for you into layman's English. The second column is the translation. What kind of sound is it? The third column is the pitch level. In other words, how big is the tallest pipe? And then it just tells you how many pipes there are. So what you really want to focus on as you hear Martin Knott speak, probably the most useful thing will be columns 2 and 3. So we'll play the video, and then I'll talk a little bit more for a couple minutes about the St. Mark's organ upstairs after the video is done.
Earlier, we talked briefly about the importance of the various stops in the organ. When I start voicing, it is the principal 8. And this organ, or the Hauptwerk, has a principal 8, the leading stop of the instrument. And to the principal 8, we call it the principal chorus, which consists of a principal 8, principal 4, which is called an octave 4, and the octave 2. The seminary organ has principals 8, 4, and 2. They're all, the scaling is slightly smaller. The principal 8, the pipe is a little bit bigger in scale than the 4 foot, and the 4 foot is a little bit bigger than the 2 foot. That is a, we call it a principal chorus with a mixture. The mixture is a combination of unison and quince mixed together. It is, has small pipes in the bass to make the bass bright, and has lower pipes in the treble to make the treble not too sharp. And then we also have a flute chorus. There's a Pommer 16, which is a foundation. It can be drawn with the principal chorus. It adds a lower octave, maybe like a double bass. And then we have the Rohrflute 8, which is a nice solo flute. The Nachthorn 4, also a flute, but an octave higher. And again, a 2 foot flute. So we have a principal chorus and a flute chorus. To add more color, there is a quint, 2 1/3, and then 1 3/5. Those two stops you really never play alone. They are related to an 8 foot pitch. They give these kind of bell-like sound. A cornet is often called too, or a sesquialta in North German. Then we have a reed. No, all, the principal chords are flute pipes, but then the reed is like the clarinet, a swinging tongue, and we have the trumpet with the grave. So with a full principal chord and the trumpet, that is really your main, that's 80% of the sound of in decibels to the instrument. Everything else is variety of sound. Then the swell division, the swell is because a pipe makes only one sound. If you want to make a particular pipe softer, you have to shade it, like shading your mouth. So that's a swell. Mr. Bach didn't have that. That's a romantic invention. So the swell has a solitional 8, which is like the principal family. And then it has a 4 foot Spitzflöte, which is a little bit hybrid. It is half principal, half flute, and it has a real principal 2, and a quint 1 1/3. So the principal 2 with a quint acts a little bit like a mixture. And as a reed, we have a chrome horn, which is an old Renaissance reed. It's a funny stop. It's cylindrical, and it is not. It has its own character. It is not as well regulated as maybe the trumpet, but it's some of the charm of it. And the pedal, of course, is supporting the lower frequencies of the organ. We have a sub A 16, which is a wooden pipe with a cap. The lotus pipe is 8 feet tall, but by capping a pipe, making it airtight at the top, it plays an octave lower. And we have a flöten principal, which is, as it says, it's a half flute, half principal, and the Korabas 4, principal chord, and the Rauschbass, which is a double pitch inefficiency, you draw the stop halfway, you play the 2 foot. In the pedal, I'm pulling it all away, you add the 2 to 3rd. So you have 2 rows of pipes playing on 1 drawn up. And the reed is called a fagot, often could be a trumpet. Fagot is a small trumpet, a cylindrical reed. So that is the spec of the organ. It is has 25 ranks, 23 voices. It's a good size instrument. Probably large for the room, but then again we have the strong voices of the seminarians, which is a lot of fun to listen to them sing with the instrument, competing with the organ.
Don't mispronounce those stops. All right, you saw a lot of German in there. Even the keyboards had German names. Page 3 on the seminary, the Hauptwerk. Haupt is the German word for head or the main thing. So the Hauptwerk is the main keyboard with the most sound. The Schwellwerk, we call it the swell. Again, this is really deep. Up here on the organ, on the right side, there's this box with the shutters in front of it. And when the organist hits the gas pedal, the shutters open, and the sound can get louder. So the sound swells up when you do that, so we call that keyboard the swell. Really deep, huh? You think organists are very positive people. How are you doing? Great. Oh, I'm swell. There's another keyboard. A third keyboard would be called the positif, but it looks like positive. So organists apparently are very happy people. So, and then there's the pedalwerk. And you can send the top keyboard sounds down to the bottom, and you can send both keyboard sounds down to the pedal. You can always go down on a two-keyboard organ. Turn to page 4 in your handout, and we'll just take a look at the St. Mark's organ real quickly. You heard about individual sounds there, but now maybe I want to put them together and show you how they might work for a hymn or for a piece of music the organist might play. Our St. Mark's organ, very similar to the seminary organ, just smaller. Not quite as much on it, but very, very similar. You can tell that both are designed for a Lutheran worship environment because of their strength and because of the sound options they have. If it's an evening service, do I have this on? Yeah, I guess it's on. If it's an evening service and there's a quiet hymn, if you're looking at the St. Mark's organ on page 4, I might just turn on in the great keyboard where the greatest sound comes from. I might just turn on the principal 8, and we sing Abide With Me, and I'll turn on the 16 and 8 foot flutes and a pedal, and I'll turn on the principal 8 in the great, and Abide With Me sounds like this for a nice quiet evening service. That seems about right. Now let's say it's a more regular Sunday service, and we're opening with hymn 230, Lord Jesus Christ be present. Now I need a 4 foot octave. I need a little more strength, but not too much. It's kind of a regular generic hymn, so I don't want to crank it out too much. Here's an 8 and a 4 foot principal playing a hymn. Seems about right. But now maybe it's the last stanza. I want to crank it out a little more, so I need a 2 foot principal. I don't have one on the great here, so I'm going to have to send it down from the swell. So 8-4-2 principals all playing together here. A little more strength. Now maybe it's the 10:45 service, and there's 3 baptisms and confirmation and communion, and everybody's visiting. And I need some more strength. So now I'm going to turn on the mixture, which is 5 higher principal pipes in octaves and half octaves, all playing for each note. So I've got the 8-foot principal, the 4-foot principal, and the mixture on, and it's going to sound like this. So now it's really bright. Now it's Easter. And it's the opening hymn, and I think it's written in laws. You have to sing Jesus Christ is Risen Today as your opening hymn in a Lutheran church. So we're going to turn on all the flutes and all the principals and all the reeds. We're going to put it all down and let it all rip. And it sounds something like this. You wouldn't do that with Abide With Me. It wouldn't feel right. Which camera? I got this camera. Okay. You wouldn't do that with Abide With Me. It wouldn't feel right. But you see how you mix them all together. Now it's the offering. Now it's the offering, and I want to produce, I have a piece of music that's based on Lord Jesus Christ, Be Present Now, based on Hymn 230, and I need a soft accompaniment, but I also need the melody to stand out. So maybe I'm going to put the string, it's called the gem's horn, I'm going to put the string down in the swell, I'm going to put two flutes down, the 16 and 8 foot flutes in the pedal, I'm going to put down in the grate, I'm going to use all flutes, I'm going to use the 8 foot flute, and the 2 2/3 and the 1 3/5. Let me add them separately. Here's the 8. Here's the 2 2/3. Here's the 1 3/5. Let me take out the 8 and hear what it sounds like without the foundation end. That sounds wrong. And it is wrong. You need the main chorus, which is the 8 foot, and then everything else is spices to give some flavor to it. So now I'm playing the offering. I have soft sound in my left hand. I have the bass and the pedal, and I've got the melody in my right hand. That's all taking place at the same time, producing a certain sound. It's like a symphony is playing, and different parts of the orchestra are producing different sounds. Now it's the postlude on Easter Sunday, and we want a trumpet tune. So I'm going to throw everything on the swell down. See on the swell on page 4 at the bottom, it says swell 16, swell unison off, swell 4. You see that? Page 4, the swell section, the middle section. At the bottom where there's no pipe, so there's extra stuff listed. Swell 16 means whatever I have down on this keyboard is also going to play an octave lower. And so not only do I get the note, but I get the note that's an octave lower. Let me give you an example. I'll put a couple sounds on. Now I'm going to turn the swell 16 on. It's going to add it an octave lower. Now I'm going to turn the swell 4 on. It's going to add everything an octave higher. So I'm playing one note, but it's like I'm playing three notes at the same time. So I'm going to put everything down. I'm going to it's called a fagot. It's really a small trumpet. I'm going to put that down. Let me play a piece that you probably have heard that you enjoy. Paul Montz's God of Grace, God of Glory. Sounds like the Hallelujah Chorus at first. But then all of a sudden, the organist jumps up and plays the melody with a trumpet in the other keyboard. And you'll see how having a strong reed with that trumpet sound is useful to bring out a melody. So here's a piece. This is just principles on the grate with the mixture. Now the trumpet on the upper keyboard. You see how the melody needs to come out? Otherwise it just sounds like pretty music. But Lutheran music wants the melody to stand out because we want the message of the words to come to your mind. As I said in Bible class a few weeks ago, nobody leaves church humming the sermon. You gotta bring a melody with some words to mind. All right, that's a little flavor of how you mix it all together. Now we're going to play the second video clip. Not too terribly enthralling. He's just going to describe for a couple minutes, I think it's 3 minutes, how an organ pipe is actually made. So we'll watch the second video clip from the SEM documentary.
Okay, this is our smallest instrument, kind of serious instrument, which we have built a few times. This one will go to Fort Wayne, Indiana. And it is a one-manual keyboard. It has no pedal board. It's called a continuo instrument because it continuously plays. Now Bach used this very extensively. Plus a continuo, the cello line. And this organ has four stops. They are wooden pipes. It's a decked 8. A chimney flute or the row flute at 4 foot pitch and a 2 foot principal and a quinte 1 1/3. I'm in the process of voicing, which means making the pipe speak. But I like to show you how this works. There is a
little blower in here, a little centrifuge blower, which pumps air into this lower case. And when I open this bung, as we call it, I show you the action. But these pipes are all handcrafted. Organ pipe maker is really a separate profession from organ building. As a master organ, I had to build these pipes, but they wouldn't look as pretty as this particular one. I don't have the routine. But the metal is an alloy between tin and lead. This is 75% tin, 25% lead. And this metal is comes in the kettle, heated up, then poured over a long table, which has little levees on each side, so the liquid metal cannot flow down. Then it cools, and it might be 3 feet by 9 feet long. So if you have an 8-foot pipe, you have one piece of metal to build an 8-foot pipe, so the table has to be long. This is about a 1-foot pipe. When the metal cools down, then it is being planed. The old masters, they used a scraper to scrape the tin thinner and polish like this. But after that metal has been done, which is very labor intensive, then the pipe maker cuts the metal in flat sheets, then he rolls it over a drum by hand. He paints the part which he wants to solder. It's a rubber arabicum paint, which dries fairly quick. Then he uses a sharp tool and scratches away the paint where the solder should flow. So if you see this solder, it's all handmade. This solder. This whole set of pipes in a box is only this high, but by the time you round it, put all this air inside, you have quite a volume of organ pipes. The metal varies. As you, in the back, we have oak pipes. They give a little bit softer, more fundamental sound. The chimney flute is 40% tin, 60% lead. So the alloy also control how the sound will be of the organ. And the other very important part is the dimension of the pipe. If I make this pipe larger in diameter, but the same length, it becomes more pronounced. This organ is petite, so all the scaling, as we call this, the scaling of the pipes is small. So the length is given by the pitch, but the intensity we can give by the diameter and by the width of the mouth. This mouth is a quarter of the circumference, which is typical for a principal pipe.
So hopefully you caught this particular accent, the whole idea of You melt down hot metal, pour it over a table, let it cool, scrape it. Building an organ is a very labor-intensive job. We see the artistic side of it. We see the white-collar side of it on Sunday morning. But to produce that thing, there's a very blue-collar side to producing an instrument like that. In the video, some of the people that helped to build the organ that worked for Martin Ott at the time are also featured. They talk about how people hear the price tag on a pipe organ and they say, how can you afford that? Why does it cost so much? Then they see everything that's involved with producing a pipe organ and their reaction is, how do you get it for so cheap? Our instrument now would probably go for $250,000. I think when you bought it, it was $150. But inflation and just the realities of what's the materials and such. And yet, that thing can last for 300 years. You don't have to buy a new digital organ every 20 years. So actually, it's a big expense up front, but in the long run, it certainly pays for itself in the long run. Page 5. The organ, and especially the pipe organ, is still considered the best instrument for accompanying congregational singing. While this doesn't mean that we should only use the organ for worship, I think we should have a variety of instruments for worship. But it does mean that the organ has a certain qualities that assist people singing better than other instruments. Can you think of what this might be? Why does a pipe organ serve as a better instrument than most for accompanying the congregation as they sing? Okay, so the pitch levels give you more support. I feel the bass support. I feel the higher levels all kind of enveloping me. I get a little more support that way. That's true? Brett? When the pastors are here, the pastors can out sing the organ. When we had pastors' conference, I was playing for the service. I couldn't hear the organ. That's how loud they sang. That was only half the district. Wait till fall. Donna? It matches the way your voice works as the air goes through. Yeah, that's an excellent point. The fact is that when you sing, when you sing a note, you keep, you don't fade away as you sing. When I play piano and I hit a note, what happens to the note? As soon as I hit the note, I'm gonna borrow Marty's joke, as soon as I hit a piano note, it's dying. Right? When I hit the organ note down, what happens? It stays. So it gives you continuous support. When piano music is written for worship, for example, we like Divine Service 1 in the supplement. We're using that right now. We're sticking This Is the Feast in for the Gloria, but we're using that service again for Easter. We have an organ arrangement of that service, and we have a piano arrangement of that service. And the piano arrangement, the organ arrangement is just straight chords. The piano arrangement rolls the chords. Why would the piano arrangement do that? There's continuous sound produced. Yeah, so that's the reason why you can't always transfer organ music to the piano and vice versa, because the style is written for the right instrument. What's neat for our situation is that we like Divine Service 1. If I'm up, and I really am more organist than piano player, never had piano lessons. I started on organ in second grade. It's a weird situation, but that's what happened. I don't play piano very well, and so I'm going to play the organ version. When I play, it's going to be 100% organ that Sunday for the most part. Others are more comfortable on piano. You know what? God bless you. Play the piano. And then if we have these arrangements of the liturgy where the melody is the same but the music underneath is written for piano, you'll get more support that way. So the organ, though, just by being a wind instrument, is very useful for supporting your singing. Here's kind of a funny comment, but it's true. There's a Lutheran way to build a pipe organ. It doesn't mean that you're drinking coffee when you build the organ either. In other words, if another church with a pipe organ closed its doors, if Our Lady of Obligation Catholic Church in Citrus Heights closes its doors and they say, we'll give our pipe organ to anybody who wants it. That name comes from Garrison Keillor, by the way. Something like that. If they close their doors and they say, here's our pipe organ, any church, you want it? And a Lutheran church in town, yeah, we want it. It might not do the job for Lutheran worship. Why? You got a little bit of knowledge for this one. I won't blame you. Want to take a stab at it? First issue is it may not be voiced for the building. They decide how much volume we need from the organ. They build the organ that way so that it's not too loud, it's right for the building. So that's one reason. John?
Well, probably the combinations of mixtures and stuff. I guess I'm also thinking of these theater organs, these huge theater organs, and you hear them playing it, and they have a fullness of sound, but it's almost a tinny sound or something like that. So I don't know that, like what you demonstrated with the softening for offering or for the evening services, is all that available on some of these other organs?
Not always. Ed, did you have a thought you wanted to add? Or?
I was going to say theater organs.
Yeah, theater. You can see a theater pipe organ when you get your pizza, right? Some of those pizza piper places. There's one in Phoenix at district convention. They're fun. They're fun to play. You can do the chicken dance on that thing. I have, when the secretary was over here as a joke, I did start playing the chicken dance on there once, and she got a kick out of that. But it doesn't sound right on this organ. It sounds great on a theater organ, right? The kind of music needs to be... The music you play needs to match the instrument you've got. The other reason is Lutheran worship is different than evangelical worship or Roman Catholic worship or Orthodox worship. A lot of those other congregations or flavors of Christianity, the role of the congregation is different. Your participation isn't as active. I remember watching the video of President Matt Harrison of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod when he was installed as their synod president. And they had a section for guests from other denominations. And there was the local Roman Catholic archbishop or whatever. And everybody, this was going around the web. Everybody watch the video and look at the archbishop. He is floored at the singing. He was, because you had a bunch of Missouri Synod pastors cranking it out at the ends of their frayed vocal cords. And it just filled the place. Well, Lutheran worship encourages congregational participation. The Roman Catholic Church is getting there. Since Vatican II, they have made strides in that direction, but they're not there yet. It really took the Lutheran Church 200 years before we had active singing participation to what we see now. It's going to take Rome the same amount of time for that to really come around. But consequently, their organs are not designed to support congregational singing as much as they're designed to provide soft cover music while other stuff is happening in the liturgy. So if you bring an organ from another church into a Lutheran church, it may not work, may not support you properly. Or the solo stuff I want to do to bring out melodies, that might not be a feature on an organ that I bring in from another church. So that's something to be aware of as well. That it just you need an organ that's designed not only for your building, which was Paul's point, but also for what you do in Lutheran worship. The singing and the special music you play during the offering or before or after church. There is, it's too bad, there's not quite enough time to play the final clip. But in the final clip, you know what, there's four interview segments in this final clip. Let's just watch the first one of the organ builder. He will help us to appreciate why churches would say, we're going to go for the larger expense of the pipe organ rather than the less expense of the digital organ, because in the long run, it really is excellent stewardship. So we'll play just a short portion of the final clip.
Electronic substitutes. And I said, yes, they're getting better, but it is a substitute. It is never the real thing. And older members on the committee or the congregation, they remember from their home church that they had a real pipe organ, and they want that sound back. If you purchase an electronic organ, it will be good for 20 years, then it needs to be replaced. But during these 20 years, you cheat two, maybe three young generations of the real sound.
They will miss it. Watching this final video clip, it's about 7 minutes long, and it just explains the great wisdom of why you take the time and expense and you have a committee investigate and you decide on what St. Mark's decided on 30 years ago. Why, when you just built this new building, you had so many other expenses. Why'd you pay $150,000 for a pipe organ? Well, do you regret it now? I don't think so. Now we're saying what a wise choice that was. And in the video, they really explain to congregations, especially congregations that are thinking about a new organ, why it's a worthwhile investment to go for a real pipe organ. But this video with these extra clips is available on in the church library. I'll put this back today, and anybody can check it out that you want to. And then this website, all the video clips, including the ones we didn't get to today, are on this website, opus54.com. So you can check out what we didn't see at home today. And if you're really an organ nerd like I am, and you want a copy of your own copy of the video, the website will show you how to get that as well. But thanks for your time and attention. I hope that what happens up there on Sunday morning makes a little bit more sense to you. So thanks for your time.